You know, this wireless microphone has a feature about it that a little thing slides over the controls to keep you from inadvertently changing it. I've never had it closed before, and so I didn't know what was going on. I thought I'd been locked out of the thing, but I think I've got it figured out now. We're so glad you're here, glad you stayed, glad you hope you got enough to eat. If you didn't, it's your own fault. Wow, what a spread. So many people came to be with us today from so many different places. And to you folks here at Redland Road, let me just say this. See, if you invite folks, they will come. Today was a good proof of that. And I know sometimes we get to think, you know, we invite so many people and nobody comes. And we think, well, nobody's going to come. I'm just not going to go to the trouble to invite. It works. I'm just going on a hunch here. You guys from Faulkner. All right, I knew you were, and I think they're all in the chorus. They ought to be anyway. They're good singers, and we sure appreciate having them here. And I'll bet Stephen Foster might have something to do with the invitation they got. We're just so thankful to have everybody here. Open your Bibles with me, if you will, to 2 Peter. 2 Peter chapter 2. I want to read a couple of verses here, and then we're going to take off running for the Old Testament, and by the time we read these two verses, I think you'll probably know where we're going into the Old Testament. But 2 Peter chapter 2, as you get down into that paragraph in about the middle of the chapter there, we find Peter describing false teachers, false prophets, those that are not teaching the truth of his day. And down there at verse 15, in describing the way they are, he says, forsaking the right way, they have gone astray, having followed the way of Balaam, son of Beor, who loved the wages of unrighteousness. But he received a rebuke for his own transgression, for a mute donkey, speaking with the voice of a man, restrained the madness of the prophet. There's another New Testament reference to that character, Balaam. It's in Revelation 2, verse 14, and it probably adds a little bit to the story that we're going to look at from way back over here in Numbers chapter 22. Numbers chapter 22 is where we're going to spend the most of our time tonight, 22 and 23, and we're going to take a close look at Balaam, and I struggled with trying to figure out what to name this sermon. I started to call it Balaam and His Donkey Business. You would not believe the neat pictures of donkeys you can find on Google Images. Their facial expressions are just priceless. But I didn't see any point in giving you something that would take your attention away from me on the screen there, so I decided to pass on the donkey pictures. The more I studied this situation here, I almost decided to call it 21 altars, 21 bulls, 21 rams, 3 blessings, and no curses. Because if you know the story of Balaam, that's basically the essentials of the whole thing. And we'll try to bring some of that out here in just a few minutes. I don't know if you noticed or not, but I didn't even go through the line and sit down and eat until after everybody else was finished. In fact, it was so unusual. One of the deacons came up to me, and he was really concerned. He was concerned that I wasn't going to have enough time to digest my food before I preached. And I said, well, you should be glad, because maybe the more I eat, the less I'll preach. But he kept looking at my plate, and he finally just walked off and shook his head. I'm not sure exactly what the message was there, but we'll try to keep this reasonably short. If you get sleepy, yawn. If you nod off, though, I may call your name. I can't promise that I won't. These afternoon services have a definite downside for the preacher. There's not a harder time in the world for a preacher to try to keep an audience awake than an afternoon service right after a big meal like that. But they're popular for a lot of other reasons, and so we have them. I'll do my best to give you enough to think about that you'll pay a little bit of attention. In Numbers chapter 22, I'd like nothing better than for us to go verse by verse and read the entire account of Balaam, but it's actually too long. There'd be too much ground to cover. And so, you know, let's just summarize it in a few different ways. First of all, I don't think there's any better known story in the Old Testament among the stories that involve animals than the story of Balaam's donkey that talked. Now, there are other stories that we're more familiar with. In fact, I find that this particular story is familiar in just the general detail or general highlights, but nothing about the details. We know about the donkey and the fact that the donkey talked, but beyond that, we don't really know all that much about it. We'll try to do something about that tonight or this afternoon. Let's think about donkeys for a minute. I hope that, I hope there's not a donkey expert here, because I want to tell you a few things about donkeys. I want to be the first to tell you that donkeys were primary in importance, in particularly in Bible time, in Bible times and in that part of the world. In fact, somebody said that the donkey was the ATV of wilderness living. And, you know, I suppose that's about right, because the donkey then was to the farmer what the pickup truck is to the farmer today. He was the primary means of transportation. He was a primary mode of carrying burdens. Everybody from Abraham to Moses to Jesus rode on a donkey in the Bible. And so they're really, really important in the grand scheme of things. Donkeys have, or at least the donkeys of the Bible times, had some really interesting qualities to them. They were outstandingly dependable animals. They were also very gentle and very friendly to people. Now, that may be in contradiction to what we find donkeys described by today, but in Bible times they were noted for their gentle disposition, their friendliness, and the fact that, you know, they were just always agreeable. Donkeys have always been stubborn, though. One of their outstanding traits is their stubbornness. And we're going to see in this story how the stubbornness of Balaam's donkey was really something that played out to his advantage. Donkeys were so important that they're mentioned specifically in Exodus chapter 13, verse 13, as being the animal, the unclean animal, by the way, that was to be the firstborn male of a man's donkey flock was to be redeemed with the sacrifice of a lamb. Now, there are some folks who say that, well, the donkey there in that verse stands for all of the domesticated animals, and that may or may not be true, I'm not sure, but I find it interesting that the donkey, the unclean donkey, is specified in that verse as being one for which a lamb was to be offered. You know, it gives us a little bit of a picture how important the donkey was when in Exodus chapter 23, verse 12, God's law called out specifically that in the working on 6 days and resting on the Sabbath, it was referenced as the fact that the donkey and the ox were to have that day of rest. Well, that gives us just a little bit of an idea of how important the donkey was in the general scheme of things in Old Testament times. Let's look to the text now. Chapter 22 opens up with a discussion of an inevitable fact. The Israelites have just about completed their 40 years of wandering in the wilderness as payment for their sins of unbelief, and now a new generation has arisen, and God is just about ready to turn them loose and let them go into the promised land. And the king of Moab, Balak, looks up and he sees this innumerable host of people camping out in the valley of Moab, and he begins to get worried. He says, you know, this could turn into a national tragedy here. That mob is going to come through here like a drove of locusts, and when they get through passing through our land, there isn't going to be anything left. And so he says, we've got to figure out something to do. It was the Moabites, and we also learned from reading the text that it was also the Midianites. Remember, we're going to take care of them, thanks to Gideon in the book of Judges just a little bit later on. But the Moabites and the Midianites were worried about this oncoming crowd of Israelites that were going to be passing through their land. They'd already heard how the Israelites had just totally wiped out the Amorites who got in their way. And it didn't take a whole lot of rocket science to figure out that this could be a major, major danger. And so, Balak, verse 5, sent messengers to Balaam. We're introduced here to the character Balaam, who is the son of Beor. He lived at Pethor, which is near the river in the land of the sons of his people. Now, from studying carefully everything the Bible tells us, we see that Balaam was actually from the land of Mesopotamia, probably not all that far from where Abraham had started out. And so we're sending messengers to Balaam. We want Balaam to come here. Why do we want Balaam? Balaam is a prophet, and we want him to come and curse these Israelites so that something bad will happen to them and they won't come through our land here. The question, though, comes up, why does the Bible not tell us anything else about Balaam the prophet, especially back there in the Old Testament? Was Balaam really a prophet? I've read some things that, it kind of makes me embarrassed to know that educated people wrote some of these ideas they have about old Balaam, and it seems to me that everybody has forgotten a very important thing. We've been focused on the Israelites now and the law that was given on Mount Sinai, but what was God's law for those people before he gave the law on Mount Sinai? You say, well, it was the patriarchal law. That's right. Who was the patriarchal law for? Oh, it was just for the Jews. Wait a minute. There was no such thing as the Jews before Abraham and his descendants. Everybody was, shall we say, common in their responsibility toward God. And so Balaam, he's not a close descendant of Abraham. He's actually got Abrahamic blood in his veins, but he's not a close descendant. And so he's not counted as one of the Israelites. But he was one of those people who had always been under the patriarchal law of God. And so I don't really have a problem with this mysterious Balaam suddenly coming up and we say, well, where in the world did he learn about God? Well, he learned about God from the same place that Abraham did. Under the patriarchal law system, it's well within reason, seems to me like, that Balaam was one of those people who served God to some extent in that area that Abraham came from. We don't have to know every little detail about everything about a fellow's background, but there doesn't seem to be a problem with Balaam being somewhat of a prophet of God. We know that he did have a reputation because look what it says there in verse 6. When Balak sends to him, he says, please come therefore and curse this people for me, since they're too mighty for me. Perhaps I'll be able to defeat them and drive them out of the land. For I know that he whom you bless is blessed, and he whom you curse is cursed. Now, I don't know how much there was to back all of that up, but that was Balaam's reputation. And that's exactly why they sent to him. And listen, They didn't send to him as just a little favor. Hey, old buddy, would you mind coming down here and putting a curse on these people and slow them down enough to where we can kill them or drive them out? No, it wasn't anything like that. They sent messengers to Balaam with a handsome sum of money to hire him. Now let me ask you something. If you go out to hire somebody, and let's say it's the kind of thing, I can't imagine what it would be, but it's the kind of thing you've got to pay up front. So you're going to pay a big price to somebody. Are you going to look around and find the guy with the best reputation, or are you just going to pick up the yellow pages and let them fall open and put your finger down and say, okay, I'm calling this guy, and give him your money? No, you're going to find somebody who's got a good reputation, somebody who comes well recommended, somebody who can give you some references. I think we're making a mistake if we try to assume then that Balaam just kind of came out of the blue and everybody assumed he had a success rate and all that. I think they probably sent for Balaam for a reason, because he was probably the best choice that they could find. So the elders of Moab and the elders of Midian departed with the fees for divination in their hand. And they came to Balaam and repeated Balak's words to him. They said, Balaam, we want you to come, because there this host of people have come up out of the wilderness from Egypt, and they're about to come through our land, and we're afraid. And Balaam said, you guys need to take your shoes off and stay a while. Spend the night here, and I'll bring back to you word as the Lord may speak to me. And so they stayed with Balaam, verse 8. And then verse 9 begins the conversation between God and Balaam. God says, who are these men who are with you? Now it wasn't that God didn't know. It wasn't that God couldn't tell. It was kind of like in the Garden of Eden when God said to Adam and Eve, where are you? He knew right where they were. God wants Balaam to rehearse all of the details. And so Balaam says, Balak, the king of Moab, sent word. Tell me about these people. He wants a curse and all that. God said to Balaam, verse 12, do not go with them. You shall not curse this people, for they are blessed. Now that's pretty clear, isn't it? Doesn't seem to be any ambiguity at all there. It's just plain as it can be. Do not go with these men, and do not curse these people, for they are blessed. And so Balaam got up the next morning and he went to these guys and he said, sorry fellas, no can do. I can't go with you on this. Go back and tell the king. Give him my regards, but you know, this is not going to happen. So that wasn't a good enough answer for old King Balak. He decides to up the ante a little bit and he gets a more distinguished group of people to go and bear his message to Balaam. And so they come a second time to Balaam and they said, listen, money is no object. Well, it's not exactly what they said, but that's what it meant. They said, we'll do whatever you want. You just name your price, old buddy, but come and curse these people. And Balaam answered them by saying, I will indeed ask God, stay with me tonight. I'll find what else the Lord has to speak to me. Verse 19. And so that night, God comes to Balaam, and God says, if the men have come to call you, rise up and go with them. But only the word that I speak to you shall you do. Now, if you didn't know anything else about this situation and didn't see the need to study it carefully, you might say, well, looks like God's changed his mind. There's another way of looking at God's words, and this will make more sense as we get further into the story. You could also read God's words. In fact, notice how this is wording. This is a little bit unusual. If the men have come to call you, rise up and go with them. Have you ever had a kid, a child? Sorry, I don't mean to imply that your little ones are baby goats, but have you ever had a little one just come to you with a request and you said no, you know, for good reason? The best reason of all is because I said so. Every daddy knows, every mother knows, that's the only reason you have to give, but every kid knows that's not good enough. You know, you can go back and ask again, and kids have a tendency to do that, and they come back, and finally, have you ever said, okay, if you insist on going out there and lying down in the middle of the road, go ahead. Well, you know, it's obvious you don't want them to go out there and lay down in the middle of the road. That's probably not a realistic request. But at any rate, you know, you get to the end of your patience and you say, look, if you're so insistent, go ahead. That may very well have been the way that God answered Balaam this second time. If the men have come to call you, rise up and go with them. Then he adds this again. But Balaam, I'm warning you, only the word which I speak to you shall you do. Whatever was behind the conversation in the details, it was all Balaam needed, and so in the morning he saddled his donkey and he went with the leaders of Moab, verse 21. Now verse 22 is what causes us to give all of this consideration to the way that it appears God has answered his question, because verse 22 says, but God was angry because he was going. God was angry because, God, I thought you said he could go. That's what leads me to believe that God answered him in a way that maybe implies almost what we would call sarcasm. At any rate, Balaam saddles his donkey and he goes on the way with these men. In verse 23, after telling us that in verse 22 that the angel of the Lord was standing in the way with his hand or with his sword in his hand, the donkey saw the angel of the Lord and turned off the way and went into the field. And so Balaam struck the donkey to turn her, interesting, her back into the way. We would have guessed that the donkey was a male, wouldn't we? Donna says no. You know, I think it's only natural that we would assume that this was a male donkey, but it was a female according to the text. And Balaam struck her to turn her back into the way. And so the angel of the Lord then moved to a narrow place in the path of the vineyards with a wall on this side and a wall on that side. And the donkey saw the angel standing there. And so the donkey presses up against the wall. You ever been on a horse when he runs up against a tree and you didn't have time to pull your leg back up? Balaam is, you know, he's hurting now. She's pressed him up against the wall. It's probably a stone wall. Her side has his leg and foot sandwiched in between that and the wall. And so Balaam struck her again. And so the angel of the Lord went further and went and stood in a narrow place where there was no way to turn to the right or the left. And the donkey saw the angel of the Lord. She laid down under Balaam. Have you ever been on a horse when he or she decided to lay down? It's just a totally uncomfortable situation from the get-go. And it can get you hurt. But it's the most awkward thing in the world when a horse decides to lay down. And this donkey has decided the only thing she can do is to lay down. And so Balaam was angry, and he struck her with his stick. Now we come to the meat of the matter, verse 28. And the Lord opened the mouth of the donkey, and she said to Balaam, what have I done to you that you have struck me these three times? I find it interesting that the text does not say, and Balaam was terrified at the idea that his donkey was talking to him. In fact, I think it's very interesting that the next thing we read is Balaam replied to her just as though he were talking to a person. Then Balaam said to the donkey, because you have made a mockery of me. Do you reckon Balaam looked back on this day and kind of shook his head, thinking about how silly he looked standing there, carrying on a conversation with a donkey? Balaam says, in fact, if there had been a sword in my hand, I would have killed you by now. The donkey said to Balaam, am I not your donkey on which you have ridden all your life to this day? Have I ever been accustomed to do so to you? And he said, well, no. And then the Lord opened the eyes of Balaam, and he saw the angel of the Lord standing in the way with his sword in his hand, and he bowed all the way to the ground. And then we read about the rebuke that the angel gave Balaam. Why did you beat your donkey, Balaam? The donkey saw me and turned aside, saved your life. And all you can do is beat her with your stick. Balaam said to the angel of the Lord, I have sinned, for I did not know that you were standing in the way against me. Now then, if it is displeasing to you, I will turn back. But the angel of the Lord said to Balaam, go with the men, but you shall speak only the word which I tell you. You reckon Balaam was finally getting the message now after the third time he's been told, I'm warning you, only say what I tell you to say. And so Balaam went along with the leaders of Balak, and Balak heard that Balaam was coming, and he went out to meet him. And we'll skip on through some of that text and get to chapter 23, because here we find Balaam going through the process of doing what he's going to do. And first he tells Balak, after Balak takes him up to a high place and says, look out there, you see all those people? That's who I want you to curse. And Balaam says, seven altars. Build seven altars. Put an ox and a ram, or a bull and a ram, on each one for me. And so they built the seven altars, and they offered the bulls and offered the rams. And then Balaam took up his discourse, verse 7, and he pronounced a blessing on the Israelites instead of a curse. And Balak was incensed. Basically, he says, you know, we've gone to all the trouble of getting you here. We've paid you all this money to curse these people, and here you bless them. Balaam says, you got to understand, I'm doing just what God tells me to do. And so Balak says, let's try this again. And he takes him to a different place, and he says, look out here, you see all these people. This is why we want you. And so Balaam says, build us seven more altars, seven more bulls, and seven more rams. We'll try it again. And they did, and got the same result. Blessing instead of cursing. Balak, understandably, by this time was just about beside himself. And so we try it one more time. Build seven more altars. Seven more bulls. Seven more rams. Offered all of those sacrifices. 21 altars, 21 bulls, 21 rams. Two attempts at cursing. Only blessing so far. Maybe the third time will be the charm. Nope. Remember what God said? You can't curse these people. They're blessed. And the third time, blessings come forth instead of cursing. And so Balak tells Balaam, you can just go on back home. We're through with this. And Balaam then speaks again, and he talks about what the Israelites are going to do in destroying the people that get in their way. And you might think that maybe that was just the end of an ill-conceived idea, and everything was going to work out now for everybody, and Balaam gets to go home, and Balak understands why, you know, this is God's will, we can't curse these people. If you continue to read you come to chapter 31, and verse 8 tells us that Balaam was killed with the sword because he was among the Midianites when the Israelites came to them and slew a whole host of them. And then you look back at Revelation chapter 21 or chapter 2, verse 14, to that passage that I made reference to at the very beginning, Revelation 2, verse 14. But I have a few things against you, because you have there some who hold to the teaching of Balaam, who kept teaching Balak to put a stumbling block before the sons of Israel, to eat things sacrificed to idols, and to commit acts of immorality. And so we know from putting all of this information together that it seems that finally Balaam and Balak did get together, and Balaam says, if you want to cause these people to fall, entice them to eat the things that God has forbidden them to eat, and entice them to be immoral. And in fact, in the book of Numbers, the next chapter or two describes the moral problems that they began to have. And so our conclusion is that Balaam, instead of cursing the Israelites, gave Balak a plan or an idea by which he could cause them to sin and therefore destroy them in God's favor. And apparently for that, Balaam paid the price with his life, chapter 31. Verse 8. And so you see, there's a little bit more to this story than just a talking donkey. As we've looked at several Old Testament stories like this, we've tried to pull from them some principles to carry with us, things, some applications to us. And I see one that keeps coming up again and again and again. God warns us over and over and over. God doesn't just tell us one time what not to do, but in His Word, He is clear and repetitious. And I'm thankful for the repetition of God in His dealing with us. Well, that took a little longer than I thought it would. You've been mighty patient. Appreciate your attention. If you're not a child of God, why not obey the gospel today, right now? If you are a Christian but have become unfaithful in your service to God, why not come back, be restored? If you're subject to our Lord's invitation in any way, we invite you to respond as we stand in sin.